Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
From the blackest corners of your mind, they call. Pulling you deep into shadow, twisting your senses, keeping you from sleep. It's time to face your darkest fears. This is Tales to Terrify. Good evening, children of the night, and welcome. We have one extra long tale for you this evening, so I'll try to keep things brief. Our latest submissions period is only a few days away, so if you've got a terrifying tale burning a hole in your brain, best spill it out now and get it ready to send in. Our voracious slush readers are poised and ready to devour. Before we dive into our tale, I'd like to give you a little something to scream about. The chance to win your own copy of the latest entry in one of the most popular modern slashers, Scream 6, which happens to be available to buy now on digital. Ghostface is back and more terrifying than ever on a rampage in the Big Apple. Melissa Barrera, Jenna Ortega, and Courtney Cox star in the sensational slasher hit Scream 6. When you get it on digital, you'll get over an hour of killer bonus content. So download it today. Or keep your eyes on our social media this weekend for your chance to win a copy of your own. If you haven't seen it, this one had elements that were a bit of a refreshing departure from the typical Scream setup, but still a worthy addition to the franchise that keeps this frighteningly fresh while still giving plenty of nods to its origins. I enjoyed it, and I hope you will too. Now, while you wait for that to drop, let's see if we can't coax some screams from you in the meantime. We have one long tale for you this evening, which comes to us from Donald Mead. Donald Mead has been writing science fiction and fantasy since the 1990s, His work has been reprinted in the year's best fantasy and horror anthology, and he is a first-place winner on the L. Ron Hubbard's Writers of the Future Award. His focus on historical fantasy frequently sends him to the library, and on occasion, to historical landmarks, in order to add a higher level of realism to his stories. In the case of the Harlem Hellfighters, which we'll hear tonight, he visited the National World War I Museum, which provided information on the Hellfighters and the many trials they faced, both in France and in their own country. He also found numerous internet sources that offered the actual recordings of Jim Europe and his band, including the songs mentioned in this story. Children of the Night, join me for Donald Mead's The Harlem Hellfighters, a Tales to Terrify original.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Jim, when was the last time somebody called you boy?
First Lieutenant Jim Europe, reins firmly in hand, looked across the buckboard at Sergeant Noble Sissel. Sissel's face was half hidden in the shadow of his cap. He'd been working on a new jazz arrangement for La Marseillaise, scratching notes on blank sheet music and shuffling through the old arrangement that was giving them fits. Jim thought,
there was that sergeant in Brest. He spotted the Hellfighters disembarking and figured we were stevedores.
Jim felt his fist ball up. He looked at me and said, boy, you and your niggers better be careful unloading the horses. That's American property.
And you just took it.
Jim shot Sis a glare. He smiled back. It was just Sis being Sis. Jim chuckled and shook his head. I pointed to the bar on my cap, and you know what that sergeant did? He laughed. No salute, no beg your pardon, Lieutenant. He just laughed and walked away.
You don't hear that from the Frenchies, do you?
Sis asked.
You know why? 'Cause they love us. Think about that. White folks who love us. And back home we got race riots and President Wilson not doing a damn thing.
Enjoy France while it lasts, Jim said. Sis leaned close.
Maybe it keeps lasting. Maybe after the war's over, we stay. Take the band on tour. Go to Italy, Spain, and England.
That's not what it's all about. Sis frowned.
Yeah, the Harlem Hellfighters and their damn mission.
He switched to his well-practiced country accent.
Look at the black man. He fight for his country, he die for it too. You think General Pershing cares about our mission?
Jim looked forward. We'll earn respect. It's hard to keep a man down when he's earned respect. Sis sputtered.
The rest of the Hellfighters are stuck in Brest unloading ships. We're the only ones even close to the front. The band, and we'll never get a shot off. It's time we think of a new mission. Staying in France.
They bumped along. Jim slowed at a gully. The horses lowered their heads and muscled through, but the wagon cracked as it rumbled over.
That was a hell of a bump, Jim said.
Better check the ropes. Sis set down the sheet music and stuck his pencil in his breast pocket. He leaned over the buckboard and tugged on the cords that secured the drums and the rest of the instruments, saxophones, cornets, trombones.
Looks okay to me.
Jim handed the reins to Sis, turned and watched as each of the five wagons loaded with instruments and musicians rumbled over the gully. There was some rough language as the mules balked, but they all made it. Jim turned forward.
We passed a sign, Sis said.
Good. Jim pulled out a map. What did it say?
Village, something.
That's a big help, Jim said. It can't be Commercy. There's no craters. The roads don't have wagon ruts.
There hasn't been a farmhouse for the past 20 miles, Sis said. It's like both sides don't give a damn about this place.
Stop! Sis pulled the reins, and Jim looked back. Felix Weir came galloping up on a mule. He had a slight build and a pencil-thin mustache. He stopped next to the wagon.
Didn't you read the sign, sir? It said Village Maudit.
Jim looked at his map.
It's not a name, Felix said. It means cursed village. We have to turn back.
We're not turning back, Jim said. Our orders are to play at the officers' club in Aix-les-Bains in the French Alps. He pointed at the white-capped mountains to the east. Those are the French Alps, so that's the direction we're going. Sis looked at Felix.
What's that supposed to mean anyway? Cursed village.
Felix shrugged.
Spanish flu, maybe. We don't need that, Sis said. Let's turn back.
Jim shook his head. We're not turning back. Colonel Hayward will chew my... He stopped. High on a wooded bluff, maybe 600 yards north of the road, were the gray walls of a decrepit castle with grimy, rock-carved walls and corner spires, roofs long rotted.
Take a look at that, Jim said.
Sis and Felix turned. Looks abandoned.
You ever perform there, Felix?
Sis asked.
You like to brag about all the fancy folks you played for.
Felix shook his head.
Those fancy folks were the crowned heads of Europe. They have better digs than that. Let's go see,
Sis said.
No,
Felix said. Jim and Sis gave him quizzical looks. Felix scowled in return.
Some castles are worth seeing. They're huge, majestic. Folks take care of them.
He looked at the hillside castle.
But the old ones? The ones before Christianity? They don't care for those at all.
Why not? Sis asked. Felix bit his lip, and Jim had the impression he was mulling the answer, chopping off notes in a long arrangement.
They're just old.
Let's get to this village first, Jim said. We can buy provisions and rest the mules, and I want to unload and oil the instruments. Too much rain in France. Sis slapped the reins. They arrived at the tiny village a half hour later. Everything about the place seemed wrong. Sure, it had the same worn cobblestone streets as any other village. The sharp-angled roofs had the same red clay tile. Dirty, curling white paint covered most of the buildings, showing dun stonework underneath. But it was eerily quiet. They came to the village square. Shops, stables, and homes showed no sign of habitation. The place should have been alive with villagers hurrying home in the late afternoon.
There!
Sis said, pointing. Someone's watching us. Jim looked at a 2-story building, apartments perhaps, and saw drapes move. Sis looked in the wagon bed.
Maybe I should dig up my Springfield.
They're just curious, Jim said, and you'll scare them if they see you waving a rifle. The other wagons caught up, and the band members climbed out.
Maybe they don't like black folks,
Sis offered. Then they're the first French who don't, Jim said. Felix dismounted his mule.
Should I call him out?
Jim nodded. Felix faced the buildings and cupped his hands to his mouth.
Nous sommes des amis. Venez écouter du jazz américain, vous allez aimer.
A few drapes moved. Jim spotted the first live person emerge from a building on the west side of the square. He could tell it was a woman by the dress, but she stayed in the building's arched entrance, hiding all other detail.
Not much of an audience, Felix said.
That's all right, said Jim. We'll call them out with jazz. Let's unload the wagons. In 20 minutes, they had dozens of folding chairs arranged around Jim's music stand. Pops Foster was limbering up his cornet with the B-flat scale. Pinkhead Parker thumped out a bass line on his barisax. The Cuban boys were warming up with a Latin dance tune. Sis could hardly be heard, warbling like a songbird. Felix, who could play anything, fished a triangle and woodblock from one of the wagons. Jim had recruited him for arranging and conducting, no need for a violin virtuoso in a jazz band. Felix seemed game enough. More figures emerged from the buildings, clinging to the shadows of doorways and the side of untrimmed trees. They shuffled, men and women, as if their hope had been sucked out. Their clothes were disheveled, hair unkempt. When one would lean into the fading sunlight of the evening, Jim could see ashen skin. He'd seen the condition before in British and French soldiers returning from the front. Sunken cheeks, vacant eyes, sometimes uncontrolled twitching. But why would these villagers suffer? They seemed forgotten by the war. The band member spotted the lurking villagers. The cacophony of warm-up music stopped, and they looked about nervously. Jim tapped the music stand with his baton.
We gotta wake these folks up. We've gotta breathe life into them. Gimme Memphis blues.
Sis grumbled. No lyrics to this one. Jim raised his baton, and the band brought instruments to lips. Cornets and clarinets leapt into the furious melody while baritones and trombones boomed the bass line. Felix tapped out a lively cadence on the woodblock. Jim glanced at the villagers. The music hit them like a wave and snapped them to attention. He'd seen it 100 times before. This was no oompa band or an orchestra paying homage to the masters. This was jazz. Fast drums, faster clarinets. Sliding trombones bleeding into measure after measure. A lot of folks thought it was trash, but man, you had to be good to play this kind of trash. Most people who heard jazz for the first time did some toe-tapping. Braver men danced if they had a gal. Few walked away. Jim glanced to the side for a reaction. One of the men, now rigid, took a few steps from his hiding place. Jim's breath caught, and he fumbled with his baton. The man looked like a corpse. Pale skin, long, spindly fingers, and jagged teeth. He covered his ears, horror on his face, and collapsed to the cobblestones, writhing. Jim recovered his baton and kept up the driving tempo of Memphis blues. He wasn't sure what to do. If this villager were ill, if his strange, misshapen body were part of the disease, the curse, then surely someone would come to help him. Jim didn't want to stop the band now that they were making an impression. To his relief, Felix set down his woodblock and tentatively walked to the stricken man. He kept a good 3 feet distance as if fearing to catch something. After a few seconds, he looked at Jim and raised his hands helplessly. Jim thought he might indeed stop to help, but more men and women emerged from their hiding places, howling and clawing. They didn't attack the band. They seemed to be at war with themselves, the music, convulsing with the trombone's blare and shuddering in sync with the rat-a-tat of the drums. The music faltered as the boys glanced from side to side. Jim snapped the baton. 1, 2. The fellas picked up the tempo, and the song regained its strength. The villagers howled even louder. But Jim saw a change. The color was returning to their faces. Sis inched closer to Jim and shouted over the music.
What the hell's going on?
I don't know, but we can't stop.
Jim chanced a glance at the tortured villagers. Not only was the color coming back to their faces, pink and flush, but their spidery fingers shortened, and their frightening teeth looked less menacing. The song was nearing its end, but the people still fought their demons. Jim turned to the band.
Dancing Deacon, straight in.
Come on, Jim, Sis said. We need a song with lyrics.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing? Jim asked.
I think so. These folks are under some kind of spell, and we can break it. I can break it, so give me a song.
Jim looked at the band.
Jazz, baby.
Sis gave a satisfied nod. The transition wasn't the smoothest. Jim had to slow the tempo, and the cornet and clarinet introduction was in a new key. But as soon as Sis hit his first line, the villagers started their inner war anew. My daddy was a ragtime trombone player. My mammy was a ragtime cabaret-er. They met one day at a tango tea, there was a syncopated wedding, and then came me. By the time Sis got to the refrain, 'cause I'm a jazz baby, the villagers' fits had eased. They stood straight and stared at the dim light of the setting sun as if seeing it for the first time. Many came closer, hesitant, but with wonderstruck expressions. Jim considered that most had never seen black folks before or heard English. He was sure they'd never heard jazz. The first person who'd approached and fallen was still on the ground. Felix crouched over him and tried to get him to stand. With the closing measures of the song, Jim rested the band, and he and Sis walked over to the man. His clothes were black, and he wore a white collar, a Catholic priest with thin, white hair. His chest heaved from his thrashing, yet when he looked up into Jim's eyes, the old priest managed a grateful smile.
Are you from God?
He asked, in passable English. Sis laughed.
No, Father, we're from Harlem.
But you must be sent by God, the priest said.
You're going to fight the devil.
Jim and Sis walked toward the stable right off the square. The morning sun peeking over the stable's roof brought new life to the dreary village. They entered. A boy and girl, perhaps in their early teens, scooped hay into the stalls using wooden pitchforks. A man, the stable owner, used a tin scoop to fill feed bags with oats. The band's mules and horses were getting first-class treatment.
See if the owner will part with a couple bags of oats, Jim said.
Sis nodded and walked toward the man. Jim saw the priest, Father Rocher, waiting patiently. The old man smiled as he approached. Jim dug out a sheet of paper from his breast pocket.
Do you have a mayor?
Dead,
said Father Rocher.
Oh, sorry,
Jim mumbled.
How about a village clerk? Maybe a tax assessor?
Taken by the devil,
said Rocher.
We were all waiting for death when you saved us.
Jim had been struggling with what had happened the previous day. They played jazz, some pretty hot stuff even by their standards, and the villagers, well, Jim's best guess was some sort of disease, a kind of lethargy that sucked them dry, and jazz was the cure. That wasn't so hard to believe. He'd read about some pretty amazing stuff about positive thinking, but this priest had a crazy notion about the devil, and Jim wasn't buying. He handed the paper to Father Rocher.
Would you give this to the owner, s'il vous plaît?
Tell him it's a voucher to pay for boarding the mules. Father Rocher took the sheet.
I'll tell him, but he won't take it. You saved him and his children.
Jim smiled, nodded, and left. In the square, scores of droopy-eyed villagers swarmed the boys as they unloaded the wagons for inventory. Felix sat on the edge of the broken fountain and watched. He nodded at Jim and pointed at one of the villagers, a man wearing an open black vest, white shirt, and wide smile.
"That guy runs the hotel. He says he'll put us all up for free."
"God almighty, I haven't slept in a bed for a month." "I suppose he thinks we saved him from the devil too," said Jim. Felix shook his head.
"He thinks we're going to kill the devil."
Father Rocher and Sis emerged from the stable. Rocher gave the voucher back to Jim.
"I tried," he said.
"He says he won't take pay for the ones who saved us."
Jim put a hand on Father Rocher's shoulder. "Gratitude is one thing, but this is going too far. I'm glad you folks are feeling better, but tomorrow morning we're going to be on our way."
"But God sent you."
"No, President Wilson sent us." Father Rocher looked down and frowned. Jim got the impression he was more frustrated than angry.
"I want to show you something. It might explain what happened here. Will you come with me?"
Jim shrugged. "Sure." He motioned to Sis and Felix. "You two come with me." Father Rocher led them up the rough cobblestone street and around a bend to a church. The church's steeple was the highest structure in the tiny village. It was built of carved stone and stretched at least 50 feet high with a wooden belfry giving it a conical top. Arched doors on three sides of the steeple served as the entrance to the sanctuary. The church was made of the same stone as the steeple, lichen-covered, giving it a spotted gray color. Father Rocher hesitated at the entrance, bringing them all to a halt.
"They came first in our dreams. Harmless, friendly images dressed for bygone days. But they were watching us, studying us."
They went inside. Light from the noonday sun filled the sanctuary. Jim had been in Catholic churches before, mostly in France since the locals were proud to show them off. The larger ones were jaw-dropping, with soaring arches, life-size statues, and masterful artwork. They all had the same design: a cross-shaped room with the priest in front, and sometimes the choir in back of the priest, and an alcove for the altar. Alcoves to the left and right of the priest's pulpit were the arms of the cross. This room was barely recognizable as a church. Father Rocher bent and took hold of a shattered pew that blocked his path.
"Help me."
They pushed the pew aside and moved forward, high stepping over splintered wood. There were no aisles, not anymore. The pews had been ripped from their metal footings like weeds and thrown in every direction.
"They did this,"
the father said, his voice quaking. They reached the dais. The pulpit lay smashed and an intricate wood lattice was ripped to shreds.
"But they have a weakness," Father Rocher said.
"They didn't know about the art of our church. Look what happened to one of their kind."
He bent and pulled the fallen lattice like a blanket and uncovered a twisted figure. Jim, Sis, and Felix staggered back. The body was gigantic, maybe 12 feet long. It was vaguely human, but its twisted limbs were little more than leather-covered bone. And its head was twice the size of an artillery shell. It was female, with long, tangled hair. Its open mouth showed broken teeth with the exception of one pointed fang, which grew from its lower jaw and had pierced the upper. Father Rocher tapped it with his foot.
"Don't be afraid. It's stone."
Sis bent and rapped its nose.
"Huh. Damn good carver. It looks so real."
"It was very real," said the father. "It wrecked the church along with its companions and master."
"I think you're putting us on," Felix said.
Father Rocher's eyes narrowed.
"If you think this is a joke, then you're a fool."
Jim knelt and touched the monster's face. Cool, rough stone. The father sounded so convinced, but it appeared to be nothing more than a statue. This was a strange little village with strange people.
"It touched the church's art, our treasure," said Father Rocher. "A lock of hair from the Virgin Mary."
Felix rolled his eyes.
Every church has some little trinket from Jesus' time. You can't seriously think it's authentic.
The father reddened.
It was our heir.
Let's not fight, Jim said. He turned to the path they'd made through the wreckage. At least you have a weapon if they ever come back. Father Roche grabbed Jim's shoulder and turned him around.
But they took it. The wolves among them sniffed it out, and their shadow master figured out a way to carry it away. Ever since, we've been their livestock.
Jim gave his best patient smile. I'm sure you'll be fine. But if you're scared, just move to another town.
You think I'm afraid for us?
Said the father.
Your jazz broke their spell. No one went to their castle lair last night. They went hungry.
Sis gulped.
But that's good, right? Just get yourself some guns, lock the doors.
Tonight, said the priest, they'll come to find out why. And they'll find you.
Jim swirled whiskey in a tumbler and listened to Sis knock out a tune on the dining hall's upright piano. Hitch your wagon to a shooting star. Felix sat next to Jim and sipped a glass of wine. Jim and the boys were living it up on the generosity of the villagers. They'd taken over the hall and filled it with song and cigarette smoke. The Cubans liked to stick together. They took a couple of tables playing poker. They'd earned their pay after a day of work. The fellas had helped clean the wrecked church, hauling out the broken pews and throwing them in a burn pile. They'd also wrestled out the monster statue. Father Roche insisted they drag it off church property where a stonemason waited to bust it into pieces. The father gave the same story to the boys, about it being real and more were coming. Jim could tell they didn't believe it either, giving the old man smiles and polite nods. Jim sipped his whiskey. Villagers crowded into the dining hall too, but they were subdued, exchanging whispers and warily watching the door. Father Roche sat at the bar, a glass of wine in one hand and a cross in the other. Felix nudged Jim.
You've been pretty quiet tonight.
Yeah, well, it's Father Roche and his monster story eating at me.
It's a statue, Felix said. It's like the Virgin's lock of hair. Just a big story to get people talking and bump up donations.
They seem so convinced. And someone wrecked their church. Why make up a story like that?
If it bothers you, go get your gun.
Jim reached under his chair and picked up his pistol holster for Felix to see. I don't want to wear it and give the fellas the wrong idea.
What idea?
Jim hesitated. That I'm scared.
Good thinking,
Felix said.
You'd never hear the end of it if Sis found out.
Jim winked. Sis hit his Springfield in the piano. Felix laughed.
You know what's really funny?
What?
Father Roche.
Jim turned and looked. The priest sat still and stone-faced on the bar stool. He stared at the door. Felix continued.
I haven't seen him take a single drink from his wine all night. You don't suppose...
Jim turned back. That it's sacramental wine? Don't Catholics think it's the actual blood of Christ? Felix nodded. Sis played the final chords of the song, and the singing faded. The boys gave themselves a rousing hand. As the applause died, they fell silent as another sound grew. The Cubans stopped talking and lowered their cards. The villagers cringed and whimpered. Wolves howled in the distance. It started deep, like the lowing of cattle, but shot alto sax high. Scores of them singing to some nameless pagan god who loved the call of horns before the hunt. They were close, certainly at the edge of the village. Father Roche spoke quietly, sadly.
They're coming.
That was all Jim needed. He snatched his holster and strapped it around his waist. Sis threw open the piano lid and pulled out his rifle. The guys around the piano watched wide-eyed. Jim had just gotten the holster belt fastened when the inn's door burst open and toppled off its hinges. The fellas jumped up and backpedaled. A figure filled the door, shaggy and human-shaped. Where there should have been a face, there was a tooth-filled snout and feral eyes. Its arms were long and hands tipped with claws. The back legs were wolf-like, and standing was unnatural for the beast. It used its hands to steady itself in the doorframe. Vicious eyes swept the room and fell upon the guys in uniform. It threw back its head and gave a deafening howl. Sis rushed forward and raised the Springfield to his shoulder. The blast made Jim flinch, but not before seeing the beast's head shatter. It crumpled back into the street. Father Rocher shuffled forward. He bent and poured his wine across the doorway's wooden planking. More howls arose right outside. There were other voices, too, high-pitched squeals, human, but barely so. There was desperate clicking like the rattle of dry bones and harsh voices speaking in languages distinctly un-French. The father looked back.
The windows.
The dining hall was not large, maybe 40 by 30 feet. There were two windows on the door side facing the street, and two more on the west side. The window nearest Jim and Felix shattered, and a man with yellow eyes and pale skin braced his arms on the sill and raised himself up. Jim pulled his .45. The man looked like a villager with ruffled black hair and a dusty green shirt. He locked eyes with Jim and hissed, showing long fangs. Jim raised his pistol.
Stop or I'll shoot!
The man worked a foot onto the sill. He let out a stream of words, only one of which, Negro, Jim understood. He fired, the bang ringing in his ears. The man's shirt showed a new, neat hole, but he didn't stop. Jim emptied the .45 into the man, but he barely slowed. Felix picked up a chair and smashed it across the man's face. He fell back through the window. Jim holstered his gun. Help me with a table. He and Felix upended a table and pushed it against the window with their weight against it. The fellas got the idea real quick, and within seconds all the windows were blocked with tables. The villagers lent their shoulders too, bracing the tables as best they could.
This can't be happening,
Felix said, his eyes wide as saucers.
Damn it, I should've listened,
Jim mumbled. A powerful thump shook the table, and it cracked and splintered.
Sis, bring the rifle!
Sis, who'd been helping hold the table at another window, snatched up the Springfield. He knelt in front of Jim's table and brought the gun to his shoulder.
Wait until you get a good shot.
I know.
Sis took aim. There was a bang outside the building on the street side.
That was a Mills bomb, Felix said.
Jim nodded. He'd heard the bang of the hand-thrown bombs plenty of times during training. Their pineapple covers and ominous pins made them favorites among the Hellfighters. There was another bang, and a volley of rifle fire. The attacking voices cried out again, this time more distant. Their cries were smothered by the shouts of men, the long bellows of a bayonet charge. Sis lowered his rifle.
It's the Hellfighters!
They dropped the tables and headed to the door. Jim could hear the sharp orders of Captain Napoleon Bonaparte Marshall in the street. Before all the fellas could exit and greet their comrades, Jim pulled Felix back into the inn. Felix nearly stumbled.
Hey!
Jim, towering over Felix by a good 5 inches, grabbed him by the lapel.
Don't hey me! When we passed that old castle yesterday, you looked like you'd seen a ghost.
Jim let loose.
Spill the beans!
Felix smoothed his lapels and glared.
When I was in Europe, I played all over. Recital halls, castle chambers, you name it. I also studied with some of the musical greats, but they taught me more than music. It's those castles. When Christians came preaching and killing 1,000 years ago, witches hid their magic.
Jim cocked his head.
Magic? Lord, first we got monsters, now we got magic. What does any of that have to do with the castle?
That's where they hid their magic, Felix said.
In the walls. They thought stone would last forever. And they were right in a sense. Thing is, the witches didn't last. They were wiped out and their magic is still there. It attracts things. Old world creatures. It's like the smell of bacon bread, it calls to them.
Jim felt heat rise under his collar. You knew about those things and you didn't warn me?
The monsters?
I've never seen anything like that in my life. When I say creatures, I mean little harmless things with wings.
Jim rubbed his face. The alcohol and late hour sapped his strength.
Come on, let's find the Hellfighters.
He and Felix stepped over the inn's busted door and into the weak oil lamplight of the street. Adding to the light were two bodies set ablaze by villagers and fed by cheap gin. One was felled by Sis in the initial attack. The other, no doubt killed by the Hellfighters. Father Rocher, cross in hand, stood over one and chanted in Latin. Sis came up.
The father called them werewolves. Still alive, he says. So we burned them.
Jim nodded and looked around.
Where are the Hellfighters?
Sis pointed. Napoleon stood over one of the burning bodies. He wore a strange, bulbous helmet. Jim walked over.
Good Lord, you're a sight for sore eyes, Jim said. Why the hell are you wearing a French helmet?
Jim looked side to side.
And where are the rest of the guys?
Napoleon nodded. He stood 6'2" with a ramrod posture and clean-shaved head now hidden by the helmet. The same disciplined mind that earned him his Harvard Law diploma was well-suited for the military.
The helmet? Napoleon said. We've been loaned to the French army to shore up their losses. How you like that? All that work to represent our country and they drop us the first chance they get. As for the Hellfighters, this is it. Me and four privates.
Jim blinked.
That can't be. I heard at least 100 guys.
Napoleon smiled.
The element of surprise. We jumped them on two sides with mill bombs and rifle fire. Then we charged, screaming like the devil. For all they knew, the whole U.S. Army was coming down the street.
He glanced at the smoldering man-wolf.
Question is, who the hell are they?
It's a long story, Jim said, yawning. But I'll make it quick. We need plenty of shut-eye so we can beat it out of here first thing in the morning.
Jim walked down the brick sidewalk of Rue des Ponceaux just a block off the Champs-Élysées. The sidewalk was slick with nighttime fog, and the echo of his footsteps gave the unsettling illusion he was being followed. Oil lamps glowed in the mist. He was alone, and the street was empty. Odd in the great city at this hour. He should know. He knew the streets of Paris like, what am I doing in Paris? A cool breeze did nothing to weaken the fog. Jim pulled his coat more closely around his neck. He felt the sable fur trim of his winter coat rather than the coarse wool of his army-issued greatcoat. That's not right. He quickened his pace, though he had no idea where he was headed. Is this a dream? Where are the Hellfighters? Whatever happened to that little village? Soft piano music floated from a tavern, and light beamed from its windows. Chopin, Jim guessed. Maybe one of those sleepy nocturnes he was famous for. The urgency that drove Jim evaporated. He stopped and opened the tavern door. There were a few patrons at the late hour. Dour, mustached men sat and regarded their drinks while their disinterested lady companions studied the color-drained wallpaper. For Parisians, their fashion sense was old-fashioned by the tune of 50 years. Men laid silk top hats and white gloves on the tables. Bustles and jet hair pieces for the women, things Jim's grandmother would have worn. The bartender, handlebar mustache and white shirt, stood behind a long oak bar. On the wall behind him were shelves full of bottles and a wide mirror. Jim walked to the bar, attracting everyone's attention. He was used to stares, so the act itself didn't bother him. But these people... It was as if he were a ribeye dangling in front of a pack of hungry dogs. Once empty eyes were now sharp and ravenous. Jim shrugged it off and sat at the bar.
Whiskey, s'il vous plaît.
The bartender looked at him, wide-eyed. Jim didn't think his French was that bad. He looked in the mirror and the reflected room, searching for a patron with whiskey he could point at. The room was empty, except for his reflection staring back. Jim didn't panic. Maybe that was the nature of dreams, but he felt pressing danger, a need to act. He turned away from the bartender, but instead of rushing for the door, he headed to the back of the room. Patrons sniffed at him as he wound through the tables. He stopped next to the piano player. The man, his bowler hat sitting on the lid of the upright piano, looked at him hungrily. Jim wheeled and kicked the man under the chin, sending him crashing on the floor. He sat.
Mesdames et messieurs, let's start off the night with the great American classic from Scott Joplin. This is called Maple Leaf Rag.
Jim pounded the ivories. Maple Leaf Rag wasn't for beginners. Some musicians described it as two marches woven together with a striding bass line any jazz man would recognize. It was packed with seventh chords and, if played well, would bring any crowd to its feet. Played at double time, it would make your head explode. Jim double-timed it. By the time he came to the cascading melody in the upper octave, the patrons were bellowing and holding their ears. Their hunger was gone, replaced by disgust, pain in many cases. A woman darted for the exit, which triggered a stampede of people shoving each other for the door. In less than a minute, Jim was alone except for one short, dumpy man who sat calmly, smiling. He was bald, with a thin beard that stretched from ear to ear, making him look like a cracked egg. The man stood and approached. Jim stopped playing and watched him. The man leaned against the piano.
"You're good."
His accent was European, but not French. He wore a red velvet vest under his jacket, with a gold watch chain looped across it.
"Your friends don't think I'm so good," Jim said.
"Oh, never mind them. They're ancient creatures, forever caged in bodies that don't age, minds that don't progress.
But you're different?"
The man nodded.
"I look after them, though they find leadership unnatural. A leader must be adaptable."
"You and your creatures are terrorizing that little village."
The man's smile faltered.
"Don't accuse me of terrorism."
Jim stood. He towered a full head taller than the man. The man didn't blink a steely eye.
"I'd sure as hell call it terrorism. You gutted their church, killed their horses, put them under some kind of spell, and for Christ's sakes, you eat them."
The man poked Jim in the chest. It felt like a punch, and sent Jim staggering back.
"Let me tell you about terror, American. You've never seen Flanders or the Somme. Tens of thousands slaughtered in an afternoon. Exploding shells decapitating hundreds in a single blast. Machine guns sweeping entire regiments. You couldn't even walk without stepping on someone's guts. And then there are the gas attacks, scorching the lungs of thousands more, leaving them coughing out their life's blood. Don't accuse me of terrorism. It's your kind that brought it."
Jim blinked and giggled. The man's eyes bulged with fury.
"What the hell's so funny?"
Jim fought to control himself and sat on the bench.
"Sorry. It's just that you're the first person to point at me and say, your kind, and be talking about my human side and not the color of my skin. But I've got you pegged now. You're not so tough. This war's pushed you and your buddies from every hiding place in Europe. Armies, machines, and weapons you can't even begin to understand. I bet you're scared out of your pants. And that old castle is your last hideout."
The man snarled.
"I have you pegged, too. It wasn't an army that chased us off tonight. It was just five noisy men. I'll make it simple. You and your niggers better be gone by tomorrow night, or we'll kill every last one of you."
Jim sat in front of Captain Napoleon Marshall, the morning sun from the inn's windows shining off Napoleon's bald head. The captain scooped eggs into his mouth with the grace of a steam shovel. He was on his third plate. Sis, Felix, and Father Rocher sat at the next table, picking through a basket of discolored fruit and fresh croissants. Napoleon gulped and looked at Jim.
"I can't stay. The colonel gave me orders."
"What's the hurry?" Jim asked.
"Spanish flu.
First battalion got hit pretty hard, so we need 8 from the band. We're on the front now. Champagne sector.
Sis leaned in close.
Champagne sector? That doesn't sound half bad.
Napoleon wiped his mouth on a napkin.
Oh yeah? How does a gas attack sound? Or a bayonet charge? How about a bedroll full of cooties? Maybe trench foot is more to your liking.
Sis grimaced and leaned back.
But this dream I had, Jim started.
I know, said Napoleon. The army of the damned. One war at a time, Jim. Let the French clean this up.
But what about us?
Father Rocher asked. Napoleon shrugged.
I don't know. Move.
They killed our horses, said the father. Our elderly can't walk all the way to the next village.
Napoleon looked at his eggs and frowned.
Jim guessed he wasn't enjoying his breakfast. It's a moot point, said Napoleon. We have no way of fighting them. You said you'd put 5 bullets into one and it barely blinked.
Jesus, sis blew the brains out of another and it rolled around for 30 minutes before we set fire to it.
Don't make me pull rank, Jim said. Napoleon pushed away his half-finished plate.
Pull rank till your head pops off. You can bring me up on charges if you come back alive.
Jim thought of some choice words for the captain. He'd save them from when the father wasn't around.
You're forgetting about the weapon, Felix said. The virgin's lock of hair.
Hidden away in the old castle, said Father Rocher.
Sure, said Napoleon. Let's march up there and get it. Maybe the band can play a marching tune to let them know we're coming.
There's another way, Felix said.
Jim and Napoleon looked at him.
How?
Napoleon said, an irritated edge to his voice.
If I tell you, will you stay? Will you fight?
If you get back this weapon?
Yeah, I'll stay,
Napoleon said.
Hell, I'll show you exactly how to use it, too.
Felix shifted in his chair.
Jim, remember when I talked about the creatures attracted to magic? There's a way to get them to do things for us.
Like find the lock of hair? Jim asked.
Yeah, but there's a catch. We have to go to the castle to get him. And we have to go at dusk.
Father Rocher shook his head.
They'll be out by dusk.
But that's the only way,
Felix said.
The creatures cling to those old structures and their magic.
Then we're up a creek without a paddle,
Napoleon said.
Old stockshells,
Father Rocher muttered.
Uncromlech.
Felix turned sharply.
Uncromlech? Vraiment?
The father nodded.
Oui. Just north of the village.
Felix brightened.
That's perfect.
What is it? Jim asked.
A stone circle,
Felix said.
Built by pagans maybe 1,000 years ago. Witches would have hidden their magic there, and it's far away from the castle.
They turned to Napoleon. He grunted.
It's gonna be tight. Get the hare and hustle back to the village before the enemy makes its move. We've got a ton of work to do. Sis, round up the band and find axes and shovels.
Sis screwed up his face.
What kind of work you got in mind?
Trenches, mostly, Napoleon said. And 2 or 3 big bonfires. We need time to drill. A lot of sprinting. Oh, I'm gonna need 2 trombones.
Jim blinked.
Trombones?
Yup. Just the instruments, not the players.
Napoleon pulled back his plate of eggs.
I'm gonna need my strength.
Jim handed the violin and bow to Felix. He recognized Felix's discerning eye as soon as he took hold of the violin's neck. Jim guessed he was judging the craftsmanship of the borrowed instrument, the wood grain, the carving of the scroll at the neck's tip, even the maker's mark, or what little he could see of it peeking through the F-hole with only the setting sun as lighting.
You're playing for pixies, Jim said, not the King of Austria.
Fairies, not pixies,
Felix said, glancing around the glade and the circle of stones.
And they have discriminating tastes.
He took the bow and drew it across the A string. A clean and steady note cut the quiet. Bugs stopped chirping, and the few birds in the vicinity fell silent. Jim had the feeling they'd gained something's attention. Felix lowered his arms.
It'll be all for nothing if Sis doesn't get here soon.
Jim turned and looked down the road that led from the glade to the village a mile away. Jim and Felix had left Sis at a pasture on their way to the circle, giving him an easy mission while they went on. They'd found the stones easily enough, bleached white by centuries of pounding sun and rain. They jutted from the worn earth like jagged tombstones. There were 30 in all, evenly spaced at 20 feet and forming a circle 200 feet in diameter. The sound of running brought Jim back to the present. Sis came hustling over a hill. He held one hand on his shoulder as if injured, and in the other hand, he held his canteen.
"This ought to be good," Jim said.
Sis jogged up, sweating and breathing hard. He handed the canteen to Felix.
"What happened?" Jim asked.
"What happened? I got kicked, that's what happened."
Sis rotated his shoulder as if to validate his claim.
"You never milked a cow before?"
"Not a French one," Sis said.
Felix drew them to the circle.
"Let's hurry."
In the center of the circle was a flat stone table. It wasn't part of the circle, but appeared to be part of the whole structure, since it was time-ravaged like the other stones. On the table lay a blanket and pie pan they'd placed there earlier.
"Sis," said Felix, "you hide on the perimeter behind one of the circle rocks."
Sis trotted off.
"Jim, you're under the blanket, but make sure you can see out. Crouch, because you're going to be jumping up pretty quick."
Jim crouched and draped the blanket over his body, leaving a space to see out of. Felix unscrewed the canteen and poured milk into the pie pan. He set the canteen on the table, took a few steps away, and looked at the horizon. Jim glanced too. The sun was gone, but there was plenty of glowing light to see by. Felix placed the violin under his chin, closed his eyes, and began to play. Jim knew the melody. Mendelssohn, he was pretty sure. Violin concerto in E minor, the meandering Andante. It was flowing and wistful, like a lazy summer day.
"The two things fairies can't resist," said Felix. "Music and milk. We'll bend their obsessions to our purposes."
The flutter of wings brought Jim's attention back to the table. He wasn't sure what to expect. The only fairies he'd ever seen were actors in Shakespeare plays. What appeared out of the gloom was small. Smaller than a cat, but not by much. It was human-shaped, male, with buzzing wings. If Felix saw it, he gave no indication, though his playing became more passionate, notes held longer for dramatic effect. The fairy sat down, and Jim got a better look being only 5 feet away. It was nude, with bushy black fur on its chest and a prominent pot belly. Not exactly the ideal fairy, but they weren't in the position to be picky. The fairy ignored Felix, entranced by the music. It swayed back and forth to the melody, glassy eyes fixed upon the pan of milk. It walked to the pan, knelt, and dipped its head. Jim sprang up, and the blanket fell away. It was a short step to the table, but it felt like a mile. Luckily, the fairy was fully mesmerized and was able only to raise its head before Jim grabbed its leg. The fairy let out a screech and madly beat its wings, kicking up dust. Jim held tight. Felix dropped the violin and rushed forward.
"Nice! Very nice!"
Sis came sprinting from his hiding place. They all studied the fairy. It beat its little fists against Jim's hand and let out a stream of French words, all of which would have undoubtedly made Father Rocher blush. Sis bent and eyed the fairy.
"Now what?"
The fairy snapped at Sis, and he jumped back.
"Now we make our deal," Felix said.
He spoke to the fairy in French. The fairy squealed in response and fought Jim's grasp. Felix spoke again. Soon, they were in conversation, though it was obvious the fairy was under duress.
"Okay,"
Felix said.
"Let it go."
Jim released its leg. The fairy proudly strutted across the stone table, bared its behind to Jim, and flew away.
"He's got attitude," Jim said.
"Is it gonna steal the lock for us?"
Sis said. Felix nodded.
"You sure?"
I don't see how it's beholden to us. They love their freedom,
Felix said.
They hate anything that holds them back.
I can sympathize, Sis mumbled.
While Jim held it, it would do anything to be free,
Felix said.
It would make any deal, but the trick is in sealing the deal. If they speak an oath a certain way, they're magically bound to it.
It put up a hell of a fuss, Jim said.
Yeah, it knows what's waiting at the castle. They're as scared of those things as we are.
Jim picked up the blanket and dumped the milk out of the pan. Let's get back to the village. I want to see what Napoleon's got in mind. Napoleon tossed a metal ball to Jim. Jim's heart leapt, and he caught it with both hands, wincing.
The Virgin Bomb, Napoleon said.
It was nearly midnight, but the light from the blazing bonfire in the village square was enough for Jim to examine the bomb. Sis had his Springfield, holding it like a lover, a fixed stare at the shadows on the outskirts of the square. Napoleon had his rifle, too, as did the four privates he'd brought along from the Hellfighters. The band was spread around the square. With no guns, they made use of what they could scrounge, axes, pitchforks, clubs. Felix and Father Rocher came closer to look at the bomb. Jim turned the bomb around. It was hard to believe it was once a trombone, specifically the bell. Its reflective finish had been ruined by the village smith's pounding hammer. The size of a cantaloupe, it had folded seams spiraling across it, and a short fuse protruded from one seam. The fuse led to the gunpowder interior and the Virgin's lock of hair, which had been delivered to Felix over an hour ago.
A nice bit of work, Napoleon said, based on my design. The ball is strong enough to hold the explosion for a fraction of a second, long enough to atomize the Virgin's hair. The seams will ensure an even disbursement of the blast. Anything within 50 feet will get hit, even if it's just a few atoms worth.
Will that be enough? Sis asked.
If the magic works as promised, said Napoleon. Father Rocher bristled.
It's not magic. It's the power of the Almighty.
Napoleon grimaced.
No offense, Father.
Jim handed the bomb to Sis. Sis's eyes bulged.
Me?
Didn't you play baseball in school? Jim asked.
Yeah, but what if I mess up?
Napoleon grinned.
We're counting on you to mess up. I divided the lock in two and made a second bomb.
Jim blinked. A second bomb? Where is it?
In the one place those werewolves can't sniff it out, Napoleon said.
He winked at Felix. Howls cut the stale night air. The fellas turned to the outlying shadows, tightening grips on weapons. Napoleon spoke to one of the privates.
What direction did that come from?
South, sir.
Except for a couple of shoulder-width alleys, there were only three roads that led into the square. The main road that came in south merged with the village square and exited north toward the church, and a smaller street that led east. Napoleon sprinted south, shouting orders. Jim and the guys were right behind. Within a minute, Napoleon had set up a firing line at another bonfire. Even Sis looked like a professional soldier with one knee down and the Springfield nestled against his shoulder.
If you've got hand weapons, stand behind, Napoleon said. If one of the riflemen gets jumped, you let the enemy have it. Zombie, werewolf, vampire, what have you, just lay into him. Go for the head.
Jim pulled his pistol.
They know we have the Virgin's hair.
Napoleon nodded.
But they don't know how we're gonna use it.
Maybe they'll lose their taste for battle and leave, said Jim. Maybe there's easier pickings elsewhere.
The thing that drives them, their master, won't give up so easily, said Father Rocher.
What kind of creature is it? Jim asked. The father let out a long breath.
An old thing. Something returned from the dead. More spirit than body. A revenant. You're the enemy now. It must stop you and your jazz.
And I thought being in the band would keep me safe, Sis muttered.
The howls returned and the shadows disgorged monsters. Werewolves came first, their gallop slowed only by the unnatural intrusion of their human-like limbs. Then vampires from Jim's dream, with their hungry scowls and sharp teeth.
Among them were shambling giants. Elongated, clawed limbs caused them to limp.
Fire! Napoleon yelled. The fellas opened up, the kick of their rifles jolting them. They bolted new rounds, aimed, and fired again. Screams arose. Monsters that took shots to the head dropped, their brains scattered like rotten cabbage. Still, they didn't die and struggled to rise as much as their remaining brains would allow. A wolf limped close, and the boys with farm tools rushed forward. They pinned it to the ground with pitchforks, and the guys with axes hacked its head off. A vampire dodged the gunfire, leapt over its stricken comrade, and fell on a rifleman. Jim emptied his pistol into the thing, but not before it tore out the man's throat. The boys with axes and pitchforks charged the vampire, but it retreated before they could do damage.
"Fall back!" Napoleon yelled. "When you get to the fountain, give him another volley, then run for the church!"
The boys didn't need a second command. They turned and hoofed it past the bonfire toward the middle of the square. Jim grabbed Sis halfway to the fountain, and they stopped.
"Use the bomb," Jim said.
He pulled out a matchbox. Sis shouldered his rifle and fished out the bomb from a side satchel. He glanced at the bonfire they'd just abandoned.
"Damn, that priest!"
Jim turned to see Father Rocher at the bonfire, his cross in one hand and a vial in the other. The monsters warily surrounded him. He flicked the vial and splashed an approaching werewolf. The werewolf yelped and rolled on the cobblestones, its fur smoking.
"Run!"
Jim called to the father.
"Run this way!"
Father Rocher looked.
"Throw it now, while they are near the fire!"
Jim didn't get a chance to yell back. A figure leapt through the flames, tall and wispy, made of little more than smoke. It knocked Father Rocher to the stones. Jim had the cold feeling the shadowy figure was the bald man from his dream. The wolves fell on the father, ripping and tearing.
"Jesus!"
Jim lit the bomb's fuse.
"Throw it!"
Sis lobbed the bomb high. It disappeared in the dark heights and reappeared for a second in the light of the fire, bouncing with a loud clack. A bang and spray of sparks split the night. Cries and howls were cut short. Monsters of every shape solidified. Most toppled and cracked on the stone street.
"It worked,"
Sis said. But as they watched, more beastly figures charged around the fire. Jim grabbed Sis's shoulder.
"Let's go."
They ran out of the square and toward the church. Napoleon and the others had already fled. Another bonfire blazed on the church grounds. It glowed brightly and silhouetted the fellas in a 3-foot-deep trench they dug in a circle round the fire. Jim and Sis dove into the trench and landed next to Felix.
"We heard an explosion," Felix said. "Did it work?"
Jim loaded a new clip in his .45.
"We got some, but more are coming."
He looked over the trench and aimed the pistol into the night.
"The father?"
"They killed him,"
Jim said. Felix paused.
"He was a brave man."
"As brave as any hellfighter."
"Maybe Napoleon should use the other bomb,"
Sis said hopefully.
"Yeah,"
Jim said. He looked side to side, but Napoleon was not in sight. The bonfire blocked his view of the other side of the trench.
"You could yell at him,"
Sis said. Jim shook his head.
"They might hear. They gotta think there was only one bomb."
Rifle fire broke out. Jim looked over the trench to see glowing eyes on the periphery of the firelight. They seemed wary now, perhaps taking stock of their losses. He could hear the pad feet of the werewolves and their sniffing. Sniffing. They were searching for another bomb, a trace of the Virgin's hair.
"We're surrounded,"
Sis said, terror in his voice.
"Steady,"
Jim said. The shadow reappeared, taking solid form. At first it was dense like an onyx pillar. It took on human shape in a few seconds. Arms, legs, a head. Finally, details emerged. Clothes, facial features, and a bowler hat. The beasts became excited at the man's presence, flitting in and out of the firelight, yelping and snarling. Jim leveled his pistol,
aimed at the man's head, and pulled the trigger. The gun rang. If the man were hit, he had no reaction. He lit and puffed a cigar. Jim peeled off the rest of his bullets, all with no effect.
"We're gonna die,"
Sis said in a small voice.
"Not yet,"
Jim growled. He released the pistol's magazine and fished for more bullets in his belt before he could reload. Sis cried out. On a silent order, the enemy came charging, all of them. They galloped, ambled, and sprinted from all sides. Jim could hear the pop of rifles from their circle trench, but none of the attackers fell. The bearded man walked forward confidently, as if strolling through the park. A human figure came charging for Jim, fangs and claws at the ready, a vampire. Jim threw his pistol, but the vampire knocked it aside.
"Now, Napoleon!"
Jim shouted.
"Now!"
Sis and Felix stood, Sis with his Springfield and Felix with a club. Jim grabbed them and pulled them down.
"The bomb," he said. "Lie flat."
They sprawled out, facing up in the shallow trench, but there was no blast.
"Jesus,"
Sis cried.
"I don't want to die like this."
The vampire appeared above them, smiling. It knelt and clamped its powerful claw around Jim's throat and squeezed. Jim grabbed the attacker's hand and pushed, using the other hand to punch its face. The vampire laughed, and its grip tightened. Jim fought for consciousness. The face of the bearded man appeared over the vampire's shoulder.
"You're nothing but black pollution. You'll die here, forsaken by your own country."
The faces of the two monsters filled Jim's vision along with the dark sky and orange glow of the fire. But a streaking object flashed into view, diving from above. Jim recognized the buzzing wings, dark hair, and potbelly of the fairy. In its grasp was a round brass ball. It released the ball into the fire and sped away, yelling in a shrill voice something French.
"Vive les fées!"
The vampire's grip wavered, and it looked up, horror on its face. The bearded man's smile disappeared, and his eyes bulged. He tried to transform into his smoky self, his arms and legs evaporating, but he wasn't fast enough. There was a blinding flash and explosion. Jim closed his eyes and covered his face with his hat as burning embers rained down. In a few seconds, the embers stopped, and he looked out. The vampire and bald man still knelt above him, stunned, wide eyes forever captured on their stone faces. The vampire teetered toward him. Jim rolled to his stomach, and he, Sis, and Felix scrambled away as it tumbled into the trench. Jim slapped the reins, and the mules picked up their pace. There hadn't been any rain for the last 2 days, a blessing as far as the fellas were concerned. No pulling stuck wagons out of the mud. It was a double blessing since they were short some extra hands. 8 band members were on their way to the champagne sector with Napoleon, 2 of them trombone players. Didn't need the players if their instruments were gone, Napoleon had reasoned. The potholed roads were getting dusty, and the fellas were eager to get to the Aix-les-Bains.
"So, what happened to the New York 15 regiment?"
Sis asked. He'd been ranting for the past 2 days since they'd left the now uncursed village.
"What happened to our designation?"
"We're the 369th now, not the 15th, Jim said. "Loaned to the French army. At least the Hellfighters are." Sis, sheet music for La Marseillaise in hand, looked at him.
"A 3-number designation is for conscripts. We're the Fighting 15, volunteers. That's how Uncle Sam treats the black man."
He slammed the sheet music on the buckboard and glared forward. After a few minutes, he took a more conciliatory tone.
"You think any more about what I said? After the war, we should stay in France. Hell, we're heroes here."
"You're determined to give up on America?" Jim asked.
"America's given up on us,"
Sis said. Jim smiled.
reached into his breast pocket and pulled out an envelope. Oh, I forgot to show you this. Napoleon brought some letters from home. He handed it to Sis. Sis turned it over and looked at the return address.
UB Blake. Didn't know he could write.
He took out the letter and read aloud.
Dear James, hope you're safe and doing well. The Hellfighters are in all the papers and folks back home sure are proud.
Sis paused.
You think they'd be proud if they knew what was happening now?
We saved that village, Jim said. I think they'd be real proud. Keep reading, Sis huffed.
I moved my band to New York City.
Sis straightened on the buckboard, a concerned look on his face. He read on.
There's big demand for jazz in this old city, and with you and Sis gone seems like the right thing to do. Boy, those Astors sure have a fine house. And the Vanderbilts.
Sis looked at Jim and shook the letter.
You be stealing our best gigs!
You sure you want to stay in France? Sis stuffed the letter back into the envelope.
Hell no! New York's our town! We need to kick UB back to Baltimore where he belongs!
The wagon hit a pothole and jostled them. There's a war to fight first, Jim said. Sis sat quiet, fuming.
We can always come back to France,
Sis said after a few minutes.
We just gotta stay alive in the meantime.
That's the easy part, Jim said. We're the band. What could happen?
That was Donald Meade's The Harlem Hellfighters, as read by Torian Brackett. Torian Brackett is an LA-based voice actor. He holds 3 Earphone Awards for his audiobook narration, having worked with Audible, Penguin, Random House, and Macmillan, notably for R.L. Stine's newest scary anthology, Stein Tinglers, and the critically acclaimed If I Survive You by Jonathan Escafree. When not behind the mic, Torian can be found on the musical theater stage, is an avid gamer, and proud member of a long-running Dungeons & Dragons campaign. Thank you, Torian. Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of tales to tell. For now. Tales to Terrify is made possible by the tremendous generosity of our supporters on Patreon and PayPal. Incredible fans like Amanda Carrillo, Amanda Gottfried, Kathy Robinson, Lessel Baxter, Orion D. Hegra, and Paul Belcher, whose generous support helps keep the lights on and flickering ominously. Not a supporter already? Head over to patreon.com/talestoterrify, where you'll find all kinds of perks, like ad-free episodes, bonus content, and one-of-a-kind collectibles and merch packs. Every dollar goes back into this show to make it as horrific as possible, and we appreciate it so much. Want another way to support the show that doesn't cost a cent? Head over to Stitcher, Podchaser, or Apple Podcasts, and leave us a 5-star review. You'll not only put an unnaturally wide smile on our faces, but help new listeners discover our terrifying tales, too. Why not share your love of the show out in the world with some Tales to Terrify merch? TalesToTerrify.com/merch will take you to our TeePublic store, where we've got a great collection of creepy custom and curated designs that's always growing. Tales to Terrify is produced by Seth Williams, Meredith Morgenstern, Andrew Gibson, and myself, Drew Sebastini, with original theme by Nebulous Entertainment. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Join us again next week as we descend deep into darkness with more Tales to Terrify.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.